So my name is Chioma Nnaji. I work at the Multicultural AIDS Coalition here in Boston. I founded and directed a program called the Africans for Improved Access Program, where we primarily provide HIV prevention and screening services to African immigrants and refugees in Massachusetts. So today I'm going to talk about an intervention called safety net parties that we specifically adapted for African immigrant women. I'm going to give you just an overview of HIV within African immigrant populations, some of the key steps and activities for the safety net parties, and then some of the key findings that we've had. So actually, HIV has been sort of surveillanced within African immigrant populations for a while in specific cities. We've been looking at it definitely in Massachusetts since 2000. It wasn't until 2008 is when the first article actually came out to say there's a hidden epidemic in this population. And so as you see, African-born persons reside in the U.S., totaled 0.3% and 1.5% of the population. And these eight areas together represent 47% of the African-born population. These eight areas also represented about 0.6% of the epidemic within communities. And so if you look, you'll see, let me just focus on Massachusetts. Anybody from any of the cities up there that you want to be highlighted? So Massachusetts, you'll see that the total number of HIV cases is 1,740. Out of the total number of cases, 206 were African-born, which is 11.8%. And then when you look specifically at the black HIV diagnosis, you'll see that 557 are the total, and African immigrants made up 182, which is about 33%. So you see the range in terms of, you know, as high as 38% in Washington, in terms of the numbers that African-born individuals are sort of being diagnosed within black HIV populations. We see the same happening in Massachusetts. 54% of black individuals diagnosed in Massachusetts are born outside of the U.S., so that includes African, primarily African and Caribbean, and within the Caribbean communities, primarily Haitian individuals. African-born populations represent 33% of people born outside the U.S., so when you look at all immigrant and refugee populations, African immigrants are 33% of the newly diagnosed, HIV newly diagnosed. And 30% recently 36% of recently diagnosed foreign-born populations had an HIV, had an AIDS diagnosis within 2 months. So we're seeing that African immigrants and other immigrants, particularly Caribbean immigrants, are entering into screening services late and entering into care services late. But what's interesting is, so it's challenging to get individuals into screening and care, but once we have African immigrants into care, they have a higher compliance compared to other communities, other black communities, but also white and Latino communities. When we specifically look at African-born women, you see that from 2000 and 2009, foreign-born population amongst females diagnosed with HIV infection increased from 37% to 46%. When we specifically look at Boston, you'll see that that number increases actually up to more than 50% within women populations. African immigrant women make up more than 50%. African-born females account for 46% of the HIV cases among foreign-born females. And, you know, I don't know if this is one of the things that makes Massachusetts sort of ridiculously unique, but we have this category called presumed heterosexual sex. So that means that the woman does not know whether their partner has HIV and or their partner is IDU or having sex with another man. Versus their partner could just be having sex with other women. That's my own political statement. So you see that majority African women are getting infected through heterosexual sex. So the Africans for Improved Access program really saw this as a critical point to start addressing this epidemic or this pandemic within the African community. So we created, we started working with African women to really adapt an intervention called Safety Net Party Intervention. Safety Net Party was actually originally created for gay men when the epidemic started. It was called something like Hot, Sexy, and Horny. I mean, really much more than interesting. The Safety Net Party, the title. And then it actually, after it was implemented amongst gay men and found to be very successful, a group of community activists actually took the intervention and adapted it for African American women and Latino women. And so we decided that we were going to use this intervention and adapt it for African immigrant women. This intervention has been evaluated by Boston University School of Public Health, and so you can actually find information on that online. So there are various ways in which we actually adapted the intervention. It originally was an intervention that was a two-part intervention to be carried over. Each part was to be about 2 or 3 hours. We realized with our population that was not going to work because women were like, you have me for one time, I'm not coming back, I have to go to work, I have to take care of my kids, so it wasn't going to work. So we had to really condense it to a one-time HIV prevention intervention. It's always been about a small group, so 6 to 10 women. These women are actually women who are friends and family members, and it's very particular for us. That was one of the adaptions that we made. It was very particular for us that it's friends and family members because it immediately creates an environment where women would feel comfortable talking to each other. And also, it was very important for us because of the way that we implemented the intervention that the host knows, and I'll talk a little bit about this later, actually knows the women who are going to be in the room, because our primary sort of criteria for women participating is that they had to be sexually active. That's it. Because we knew the complications or some of the challenges around condom use and other issues with within the African community, so that they had to be sexually active. It's based on the health belief model. We see it as being very culturally and linguistically appropriate, and I'll talk a little bit more about how we sort of work around that. But Safety Net Parties really mirrors some of the cultural traditions around holding tea parties, and within the African-American community, could be Tupperware parties, similar concept, within African communities. So it was very easy for us to say, let's come together and just have dinner and hang out, and then we're going to talk about sexual health. And we also saw this intervention as building the capacity within communities. So the way that we engage community, again, is by utilizing a host. And so that host actually gets stipend. And so not only are we working with the community member to build their capacity around HIV and AIDS, that particular host, because that host actually co-facilitates, we're also providing an income-generating activity for women who are not able to get jobs for whatever reason, whether it's immigration status, or women who find it very challenging to put aside 5 hours when they know they could work for 5 hours and get paid. So we try to compensate that in a little bit. So the first step in the Safety Net Party intervention is that we actually recruit an African immigrant woman from the community to host the party. And we actually recruit through our existing networks in the community. So that could be African civic organizations, that could be churches, that could be African women who are leaders in the community. It could be a variety of sources. But we contact community women and say, look, there's an opportunity for you to really, you know, engage your community around sexual health. We do not call it an HIV prevention group. We call it about sexual health, and you'll see why in a minute. But to engage your community around sexual health, and we get to, you know, talk about sex, talk about pleasing our men, and talk about condoms, and it's a real fun activity. And women really jump on it quickly. So we recruit 5 minutes. Okay. So we recruit, and then we work with the Safety Net Party host to set up the date and time to recruit 6 to 10 women from the social network. We implement the group, and then we do follow-up. So the general sort of process of implementing the group is this is another adaption that happened, that we spend an hour building the rapport. So as facilitators, we come, we sit, we eat, we hang out, for an hour. And that's very important because food within African context is a very social activity. And it gives the women time to sort of get to know us. It also gives us time to get to know the woman and also to do our individual level interventions. We found it important to include individual level interventions because we wanted to sort of engage women on a more personal basis on some of their particular risk factors. And that directly leads to us being able to provide on-site HIV testing in women's homes. And women are very open to us coming in doing HIV testing in their homes. And you'll see later some of the stats that we have around HIV testing. And so in the middle of that, we also do the group level intervention. And these are the key components of the curriculum. They've been adapted from the original curriculum. The original curriculum includes body awareness, but for men and women. So when we talk about body awareness, it's really about understanding your body anatomy, your reproductive organs. And originally, it was for men and women, body anatomy. But what we realized with African women is that we spent an amazing amount of time on just talking about women's bodies. Women understanding that where they urinate from and where their menstrual cycle comes from are two different holes. Something that we might say is very basic, but you know, within a cultural framework that doesn't talk about sex and sexuality, is actually sort of something that needs to be sort of women need to be educated on. So we operate this as if we are going to work as co-facilitators. So we do group agreements. We also do grievance procedures to let women know that if we say anything in their household, that they can definitely have ways to report us. And then we also go over confidentiality. We actually do an icebreaker, and the icebreaker basically asks the question, if we had enough time, I'll go around the room to see what people have to say. But it basically asks the question, if you go to bed as a woman and you wake up as a man, what would you miss as a woman? And women, some women are, you know, oh, I just want to be a man because they get to do whatever they want to do. And you know, but most women talk about what they love about their bodies. And we build off of that. So we really start from a strength-based approach, okay? What do you love about yourself? And what you love about yourself, then you should protect it. And what does it mean to protect it? First, let's start by understanding what we have. What are our reproductive systems? And we talk about the reproductive systems from the outside and the inside, if you understand what I mean. So, of course, we do HIV and STD 101. And these are not didactic presentations. They are actually games. And so HIV, STD 101s, we use an anatomy board, and women are able to actually, we go through the various body parts and the various sort of what is HIV, and women are actually used the anatomy board in the quiz to actually win games and win prizes. About 2 years ago, we introduced biomedical HIV prevention research. Here in Massachusetts, we have a couple of institutions that are funded to do microcovocytes research, and so really working to engage African women into that research. And then we do female and male condom demonstration. It's interesting in the previous presentation with Chinese women about cheeking. That is one of the main things that women want to know about. How do you cheek a condom and how do you put on a condom in a way that your partner will know but will enjoy it at the same time so he won't complain too much. And then female condoms are always a hit also because women have never seen a female condom. HIV testing, wrap-up, and then the evaluation. So within the past FY, we conducted 7 groups, reached 76 women, and you see the diversity in terms of the countries. We also reached first-generation individuals who are women and girls who were born here in the U.S., but their parents are from the continent. And you see the wide range of age groups. It was important for us to target specifically married women because within the African immigrant population, especially here in Massachusetts, married women are the ones who are showing up at hospitals and clinics as newly diagnosed, whether they find out when they are giving birth or whether they find out because they are exhibiting symptoms. So some of the basic risk assessment data, 58% was sexually active within 12 months, 22 had sex without a condom, and 28% had an HIV test longer than 12 months ago. Primarily, women got HIV testing for immigration reasons, not because it was a part of their ongoing care. Some of these are the major themes that we documented during the discussions of the groups. Negotiating condoms is a big issue. How do we talk to our husbands or our partners about condom use? And then how do we actually support women in actually putting on the condom? A lot of women have never touched a condom, didn't want to touch lubricant. And so how do we really work with women on building their skills? Gender dynamics, douching, and religion. Especially with the Somali women, when we would talk about the female anatomy, Somali women, we got into deep conversations about female circumcision. And not particularly from a woman's human rights perspective, but how does it impact HIV and increase HIV and STD infections. So as you see that majority of individuals increased their knowledge around female anatomy, HIV and AIDS, and other hepatitis and STDs and ways to prevent HIV, most of the women were determined to change or thinking about changing as it relates to preventing HIV and getting tested. The women who you'll see, the two women who said that they were not sort of interested or won't change around HIV testing said they recently got a test, and that was probably on site also. And so this is the take home, and this is why we really feel that it's also beneficial to do this type of group in the home of within African women's, within the African community, because the majority, 57% of the women got tested for HIV. You will not see that in a standard sort of intervention that is at a clinical base or even a community-based organization. The impact, this is my last question slide, the impact of safety net parties, because we did the basic risk assessment as part of the group, we were actually able to navigate women to STI screenings and health insurance enrollment. You'll be surprised, even here in Massachusetts with the health care reform, there are people who do not have health insurance. And so the majority of the women that we see are at that sort of either they're at the, you know, walking the line or they don't have health insurance for various reasons. Interestingly enough, we had partners. I got it. We had partners who actually contacted us. So a couple of the women would take condoms home and lubricants home. One particular woman, we talked to her about oral sex because it's something that her partner, her husband really wanted. He actually contacted us and said thank you and asked us to give, I promise, said thank you and asked us to continue to give his wife flavored condoms. And so, of course, we opened more discussions around sex and sexuality, and women, through word of mouth, actually recruited other women to hold safety net parties. Thank you.